Hello and welcome to episode 17 of the First and Gold podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined with Sim Longa. And Sim, the Prue basketball team just wrapped up their game at Marquette, and it was a game where it was a disappointing outcome. They ended up losing 76 to 58. A game where I would argue that the score does not kind of dictate how that game was played. It was a very back and forth game for most of that game. But kind of one where we talked about, you never want to say that there's a loss that's a good loss. I don't believe in that. But I do think that if you are ever going to lose a game like this, losing it in the non-conference in November is a pretty good time to have that game.
Yeah, I think when we were looking at the non-conference schedule before the season, you knew there were going to be some games that were possible hiccups, possible, stumbling blocks. And the last two that they've played, between Alabama and Marquette were definitely ones that I think we all knew, if you could split them, that's great. Obviously you don't want to lose both of them. And we played so well on Friday, but you knew that this was a possibility. Just going into this game, I mean, Marquette's a phenomenal team defensively. They're very, very sound. I didn't realize too, they're like us and that they have no transfers. So everyone's either a freshman they recruited in, or it's just it's returning players. So it's guys who've been in that system, been in that program for a while. So they've been able to kind of establish a culture, and there's a lot more, I'm sure, familiarity between more of their guys. And honestly, it showed tonight. And I think today, tonight's game isn't one to cause any type of panic or like overreaction. I think we all, again, we knew that this team's young. We're young, and we have guys who are playing in elevated roles, guys who are getting their first exposure to being a ranked team on the road. So these were going to be some of the growing pains that this Purdue team was going to go through. So like you said, 76-58, but it really wasn't that way. I would say probably wasn't until like the let's say probably the 6 minute mark of the second half when you could kind of feel the game slipping away from Purdue. But prior to that, it was played probably, I think, within probably like a 6-8 point window. So
Yeah, and I think kind of the interesting thing about this game is leading up to the Alabama game, and we talked about it on the last pod. The two things we really wanted to see Purdue do was take care of the basketball and rebound the basketball. And against Alabama, they did a phenomenal job of taking care of the basketball. They had three turnovers. I mean, it was night and day from kind of what we had seen leading up to the Alabama game. Of course, you knew going into Marquette, you weren't going to turn the ball over three times. You're going to have more than that. But they regressed pretty severely and looked like the team early on. And the fact that the turnovers almost, I'm trying to like, so many of the turnovers that they had were live ball turnovers that led to dunks, led to layups. And Marquette is just such a good team. And I want to give a credit to Marquette because they are really good. And going on the road and playing them, a lot of teams are going to stub their toe at Marquette. And I think Jason Bonetti even talked about it. I think he had said in the past 2 years, Baylor and Texas have both gone there and lost. So, I mean, it's not like anything to really hang your hat on. The one discouraging thing, though, to me was the turnovers and just the there was some real and, for lack of a better term, just lazy passes, just like. There was just a lot of times where Purdue was not strong with the basketball. And this goes all the way down. Like, of course, everybody's going to point the finger at Brain because he's the point guard. And Brain had some plays where he really probably could have made better decisions. But even Trey on the block had a couple where he got baited into passes. He got doubled and the short pass on the wing was there, and there were two Marquette guys there to intercept that pass.
Yeah, another way of thinking about, yeah.
And even Fletch had a couple times where he would try to drive in the lane, wasn't strong with a basketball, loose ball, ended up in a turnover. You had the bigs, sometimes struggled catching passes. Sometimes the passes weren't always there, but it was what well, my point is it was everybody. I don't think you can just say, oh, one guy played sloppy. It was a really, like, top to bottom, the turnovers. Purdue was really careless with the basketball, and a lot of the turnovers led to fast break points, which is the one thing you just can't give good teams.
Yeah, no, it's just like we talked about, like you said, just like we talked about before the Alabama game. You can't like you're gonna have turnovers. I think that's just part. It's just part of it. But you wanted to try to ha like if you have turnovers, your choice obviously is always gonna be to have dead ball turnovers. So oh, it goes out of bounds, or even if it's like a shot clock violation, that way the opposing team isn't immediately getting the ball, and it's the first. Your bad pass is the first pass in their fast break type deal, and that's just not what we saw tonight. Like you said, it seems as though a lot of the passes were just too lackadaisical in the way that we were passing. Even it just felt like Marquette was getting their hands on a lot of the stuff, a lot of the passes. But also, I would say some of the passes we were even trying, it just was like, well, why are you doing that? Like I'm thinking of one play in particular where I think it was in the second half, and Fletch tried to pass it all the way across court, and there were like two or three Marquette guys, and two of them got their hands on, and it went out off of them. So it wasn't a turnover, but it's just kind of like that's to me, that's an example of just what it was like for us tonight in terms of some of the passes that we were attempting. And like you said, Marquette, a phenomenal team. Looking at the box score right now, and just seeing that almost all of their all but one of, excuse me, four of their five starters scored double figures, and they all but six of their total points came from their starting five. So clearly, that starting five, they lean on them pretty heavily, but they're clearly a very productive group. And yeah, you just with those turnovers, you knew that, like, I think 4 or 5 minutes into the game, we already had five, and we had three all the entire game against Alabama. And Marquette's a better defensive team than Alabama, so if you're having more turnovers against a team that is better defensively, and then also you're giving them opportunities to get out and run, Cam Jones, Chase Ross, Stevie Mitchell, like they don't need any more help in terms of their ability to drive to the basket and get buckets. So for us, with some of the live ball turnovers we were having, we have 15 turnovers, and it led to 18 Marquette points. Meanwhile, they only had, I mean, they had six turnovers. We got 8 points out of it. So that's a 10-point difference right there. So it just,
And
yeah, just it was just all the things we kind of we
how
worried
many
about.
points did we lose by?
18.
There you go.
Yeah, between that and points in the paint. I also say, yeah, I mean, I would also say too, like us, we defensively weren't, we weren't as keyed in as we were in the Alabama game. And honestly, I feel like Marquette did to us what we did to Alabama in terms of like just the way that guys performed, and even
Now,
like
I
guys
will
who
say
were coming in off the bench.
one of
I
my
felt like
favorite
what.
I was one of my favorite Matt Painter lines, and y'all know I love me some Matt Painter quotes, and one that he always hangs his hat on is when you shoot the ball well, you defend well also. And especially on the road, like when you are missing shots, that leads to not defending well either. And those two play such hand in hand. It's, like Purdue did not shoot the ball well at all. And granted, they did not defend well at all. Now, I will say, and I don't know how you feel, Sim. I'm not as worried probably defensively as like Matt Painter, because Matt Painter, Purdue could hold Marquette to 5 points, and Matt Painter's going to be upset about the defense. That's just the coach him.
Right.
My point is, you played probably two of the three best guards in the country. And I'm a homer. I'm going to say that Brayden Smith is the other one. But in Sears and Cam Jones, you play two of the very best guards in the country. And they're going to do some things. You know, they're going to break you down off the dribble. I thought Cam Jones tonight, you know, he got some points late. I thought Purdue held him in check point wise, but he did phenomenal things off the dribble. He broke Purdue down, and found guys for Marquette. I mean, of course, you know, he got his first triple double since Dwayne Wade. So anytime you're in a conversation with him, you're doing something right. But I'm not ready to hit the panic button too much on the defense, only because of the fact of the guards that they've played. To me, I think the bigger issue is the turnovers. But defensively, I'm not as worried yet. Simply because of the guards that Purdue has gone up against in the past week.
Yeah, I mean, you play two top tier guards, like you said, they're going to be able to have a, they're going to do some things that you're not going to see necessarily throughout the rest of the season in the way that, like, a Mark Sears and then, like you said, tonight, Cam Jones, the way that they were able to impact the game. I mean, Cam Jones only had 10 assists. And obviously, if you were watching the game, you saw how he got his last assist. It wasn't until late. But I'm curious, you know, if they counted like hockey assists in basketball, I'm curious how many of those he would have. I mean, how many, like, you know, how many hockey assists he would have had where he wasn't necessarily the guy who passed to someone who scored, but he, in terms of, like, you were talking about how the way he was able to break down the defense, his first action, then setting up somebody else who then, you know, then made the subsequent pass to someone to the other guy who you know who then scored. I'm curious about that because he did it. He played really well. He controlled the tempo. He got to his spots. Yeah, he played really well. And just like you said, I mean, if you're the first, you know, to be mentioned, especially in, you know, American basketball in general, but of course, obviously within the space of Marquette, you know, he's the first person to have a triple double since Dwayne Wade did. And that, I think is what the East Regional Final in 2003. That shows you what, like, just in terms of what type of impact he had on the game today, not just with scoring, because like you said, he got a few baskets later after, like, when it was kind of clear they were pulling away. But I mean, he had 13 rebounds, 12 of them defensive rebounds, which obviously is, like, kind of what we want in terms of our guards crashing the boards, like, and needing it to be like a group effort. And then he had 10 assists, and he shot efficiently too. It was 7 of 12 from the field. And he played almost 36 minutes. So he was out there. He's out there a lot. Only picked up two fouls too, I believe. Yeah, only picked up two fouls. So, like you said, you're probably not going to see the level of play that you saw from Cam and well, rather I say the level of the caliber of point guard that you saw with Cam and Mark Sears. You're definitely not going to see him in you know, a 5 day span unless it's a tourney. But they did exactly as they, I mean, well, at least Cam did exactly what you would think a guy of his caliber would do in terms of being able to dominate and control the game. And he was good defensively as well, as was really their whole, specifically all of their guards. But I think as a unit, Marquette guarded beautifully the way they were able to, you know, to rotate, get back on defense. Then they were, you know, had their hands in the passing lanes. I mean, they really, I was telling you know, I was saying this to you before we got on here and recorded, they felt like a boa constrictor. Like that's kind of how I feel like Marquette did us tonight. They just kind of wrapped themselves around and then just kind of tightened the grip. And especially in the second half, you could just kind of tell, like, we were working so hard to try to get into action, try to get stuff going. And it felt like the harder we were trying, the harder they were squeezing. And so, yeah, I mean, then you get to that, there's that big sequence, I think a little over the halfway point of the second half. And, you know, we have a chance to get the lead down to two. First, Caleb, he gets blocked on the layup as he's cutting the basket, and then they come down and they hit the three and bring it back to seven. It just felt like that was a real gut punch because I don't think Purdue ever got closer after that.
Yeah, I think that was definitely the turning point in the game. And to your point, I don't think they got closer. And I do want to ask you too, because I'm curious your thoughts on what side you weigh on. It's kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg. But Purdue as a team, I think you would agree this season is very perimeter oriented. They're a team that's going to have to make shots to win games. And they simply did not do that tonight. I don't think Purdue is ever going to win a game where they hit 5 3-pointers and you get 0 points from CJ, Jakari, Miles, and Raleigh. My question is, do you think that was more Marquette's defense? Do you think that was Purdue just missing shots on the road? How concerned are you about that offense? Because I think, once you get past the big three of Trey, Fletcher, and Brayden, you have guys, and guys need to make shots out of there. And I do want to give a quick shout out to Cam Heidi because I think Cam really played well, knocked down two threes, had a drive to the basket that I thought he was about to put somebody on a poster, got fouled, knocked down both his free throws. But outside of that, the offense was pretty non-existent. So is that an area of concern now, or do you chalk that more up to Marquette being really good on the defensive end and being on the road?
Yeah, I tend to give more of the credit to Marquette, especially later, because like I'm thinking like some of these guys had they had open looks. Like Miles had a corner three at the end of the first half that was wide open and he missed. Jakari had a couple he had a couple good looks as well, open looks from three, and he wasn't able to cast those. And you'd like to think that just playing a percentage game, that if they continue to have those open looks, even on the road, you like to think that those shots are going to fall. And if those shots fall, then obviously, that those are boosts to guys' confidence. What I think just kind of happened is that, you're missing those shots, and then Marquette is continuing to apply pressure to you defensively. And then you start to understand in terms of like when it's a close game and it's kind of going back and forth and you're trying to make a comeback, you become more aware of like, hey, we have to play perfect. We have to score, and then we have to get a stop. Scoring, we have to get a stop. Your margin for error starts to shrink as you're getting later into the game. And so then I think some of those guys just might have been playing a bit tight. Like, this is CJ Nicari's probably first time playing in this type of environment. And I know Paint's mentioned this multiple times about how there have been guys over the years, we have guys who are, freshmen, sophomore, guys who like don't know what it's like to be on the road and not have a court storm on them. So, you come into that type of environment, a crowd raucous as that Marquette crowd is. And like you said, it's no new thing for good teams to go into Marquette and leave with a double digit loss. So I'm trying not to overreact about this, because this is just kind of what you it wasn't outside of the realm of possibility. Just, I guess that's probably the best way I can say it. It just wasn't outside of the realm of possibility, because this Purdue team is trying to figure out its identity. And yeah, you're right. I mean, when you don't get any offensive production from those four guys, it's definitely, I mean, it could have, if this happened at Mackey, it probably still would have been, maybe Purdue finds a way to win. But if this had happened at Mackey, like, you could very well see them losing in a game like that, where you're not getting much production from anybody else outside of those big three who you mentioned. So I'm not like necessarily, I'm not like crazy concerned, because like I said, Marquette's a good defensive team. And for some of these guys, it's their first time getting like real minutes under the bright lights like this. I just expect them all to take it as a learning experience, and understand, like, if you go back, you look at the tape, that there were times where they had looks and they just didn't fall. So, we just, you get back in the gym and you continue to put shots up, and just have faith that within that practice and that preparation, that eventually, that come game time, you'll start making those shots that you were missing, and then you start making them. And then, the game kind of goes a different way. 'Cause when those guys start hitting shots too, it makes the game easier, I think, for a Braden and a Fletch and a TKR, because now the defense has to worry about other guys. But when those guys aren't having, they haven't hit shots early, now they maybe are a little bit more reluctant to take shots later in the game. Defensively, you start to understand that, and you're like, all right, cool. Like, we can kind of play off them a bit and really try to apply the pressure to these three, because these guys don't, like, they clearly don't have any confidence, and they're not necessarily trying to, they haven't punished us yet. So they kind of have to prove to us that, okay, yeah, we have to kind of lock back in on you guys.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with you. It's not something that I'm too worried about now, but something just to keep an eye on is like who, like you don't necessarily need every guy to ball out every game, but you need somebody from that group to kind of step up. And you know, of course, in the Alabama game, it was, you know, it was, AJ hit the three threes in 52 seconds. That kind of, you know, was the difference in the game. Obviously, you didn't have that, but like I said, you didn't get anything from those four. And you're just not going to win games if you don't get production from those guys. But I did want to talk about Braden a little bit too, because I feel like a narrative is going to be out there, and I haven't been on Twitter yet, but I feel like on the message boards and on Twitter, a lot of people are going to be calling out Braden. And I think Braden would probably be the first person to tell you that he didn't have his best game. But you know, I don't know I don't think he played that poorly. He didn't shoot the ball well. He finished 4 of 10, but he knocked down three threes, had 9 assists, 4 rebounds. They only credited him with 2 turnovers. Like we talked about off air, I feel like there was probably a couple more you could credit to him. But to me, the glaring issue was a lot was put on Braden's shoulders in this game, where it seemed like a lot of guys were like standing around waiting for Braden to make a play. And you know, the defense Marquette played attacked Braden perfectly, I think. And you really needed a secondary ball handler to step up and kind of take some of the pressure off Braden. And you never really got that throughout the game. So I don't think that Braden played that poorly of a game. Like I said, I think he'll be the first one to tell you, you know, that there's some things he could do better. But I'm not gonna sit here and say that Braden cost you the game. To me, I think the bigger issue is trying to find other guys to kind of step up and, you know, try to make a play with the ball in their hands, because it seemed like a lot of guys were just standing around waiting for Braden to make a play.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think that you look, yeah, you look at the, I think if you just use the eye test, you sit there and yeah, you probably say, yeah, Braden didn't play well, because there was definitely points where it looked like he was pressing. He was pressing and like you said, he's only got credited for 2 turnovers, but it definitely felt like it was more than that. But again, I give a lot of credit to Marquette in terms of just the different looks that they gave him, the 1-2-1 zone that they were running. Actually, 1-2-1, really full court that they were running on him, and then at 1.2 they started blitzing him, you know, to get the ball out of his hands, and that's kind of where I started to notice that it looked as though guys were being hesitant or they were reluctant to try to do something on their own, at least, and not even necessarily trying to go, you know, 1-on-2 to the basket, like per se, but just more, hey, you know, we get the ball up over half court after they've tried to blitz or trap Braden. It's like, okay, well, now it's what, 4-on-3, so. You know, somebody needs to be willing to at least try to at least like attack to put some more pressure on the defense, and then see if there's something there. And if not, pull the ball back out. Let's swing this around. Let's see if we can get into our offense. I think that's why you mentioned it. Off air, but you saw CJ and Braden playing a lot together, especially in the second half. And I think that later in the season, at least what my hope is that you see that more often in situations like this, where you have a team that defensively will pick you up full court, and where you have that second ball handler, the guy who can, but also another guy who can get us into some action or be able to attack. Because yeah, you can't just have it be, hey, we look at Braden and Braden, we go as Braden goes. I mean, it kind of is that way, but teams are going to be keyed in on Braden in terms of, hey, we cannot allow him to get loose. Like nobody wants Braden to put a triple double up on them, because if that's the case, it'll be much like it was for Cam Jones tonight. Like, Braden puts up a triple double, I got a hard time believing that we're going to lose, you know? So try to give Braden different looks. They're going to try to like overwhelm him and put the ball in other people's hands. And so you want to see someone be able to step up and be able to be that, I guess that secondary orchestrator of like kind of getting us into offense. Because yeah, you're going to need that. And you need to be able to punish teams too, if they're going to try to overcommit to taking Braden out the game. It's the same thing as like the last couple of years with Edie, where like, it was like, okay, if these teams are going to double, possibly triple team him and Edie kicks the ball out, you know, we need to make sure that we're either swinging that ball all around to the open shooter, you know, and knocking down shots, or if they're double, triple teaming him, someone on the other side is cutting to the basket, you know, and then obviously Zach would have to hit him, and then, you know, you have to punish them that way. But there has to be a consequence essentially for every defense that tries to really take Braden out the game. So if they're committing extra personnel, whether that's one extra person or it's two extra people to try to trap him or something like that, there needs to be a punishment for that. Like, hey, if you do send two guys at him and try to trap him and he gets rid of the ball, then yeah, it should be, you know, a 4-on-2, a 4-on-3, you know, fast break of sorts. And then we should be able to get something out of that, because I think that's also too, how you can make teams second guess doing that stuff. And sometimes all you need is just to be able to create that moment of hesitation from one or two guys on the floor in terms of, hey, we're supposed to go do this, but like, hey, the last couple of possessions we've done it, they've ended up burning us for, you know, whether it was a three or so-and-so got to the basket. That's where I look at guys like Cam and Miles in terms of going up and, you know, getting your own poster. So yeah, like Braden didn't have a terrible game, and like you said, I think he will very much so say that there's areas he could improve at. But I attribute a lot of kind of his struggles to what Marquette did. But I also just, again, it's a learning opportunity for a lot of the other guys in terms of knowing, like, look, teams might do this to him. I need to be ready. I need to be ready, you know, to perform or to step up if teams are going to do this type of stuff to try to take Braden out of it or to make life difficult on him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. One other thing I just want to kind of touch on as we put a bow on the Marquette game specifically is Trey Kaufman-Wren. I feel like has played probably two of his best games as a Purdue Boilermaker. Obviously, in the victory against Alabama, you know, he really shined, had a career-high 26 points. And I know he got off to a slow start tonight, but if you look at what he did, I mean, he played 34 minutes, 7 of 10 shooting. Now, granted, 2 of 4 from the free throw line. If you're going to pick at something, you know, he needs to be better from the line. But if he gets 16 points on 10 shots with 8 rebounds and 3 assists, I think you're going to take that every night of the week. And really just wanted to give him a shout out because he has really just been playing some really good basketball. I think him and Braden really got going in the second half on the pick and roll. And like I said, you know, he was credited with 3 turnovers. One turnover was a terrible call. It was not a travel. On the drop step where he had a dunk that's not a travel at all. That was an awful call. But the other two turnovers were on Trey. He kind of got baited into some passes on the block. And again, that's just one thing that you're going to learn on. But he also made a couple of passes out of the block too, where, you know, he like – dribbled in the paint and kicked it out on the wing. I think he hit Cam one time for a 3. So he finished with 3 assists on there. But, you know, just wanted to give him a shout out because I think he is really playing really good. Obviously, when you score a career high against Alabama, against, you know, going up against one of the best shot blockers in the nation, to do that and then to turn around on the road and, like I said, to get 16 points on 10 shots, 8 rebounds, you're going to take that every day of the week from Trey there.
Yeah, I'd also point out the fact, too, that the last two games he's had 8 rebounds. So I think the was it the Yale game? He had 3 rebounds, and I think Payne even came out and said it in his presser. He's like, he needs to get more rebounds. And I know you and I were talking about it. I know other people were talking about it. And you see these last couple of games, he's definitely made it more of a focal point, in addition to, you know, obviously trying to get established and going offensively, but being, you know, being a presence on the board and boards. And I think that's really important too, because he talked about how he enjoys playing the five. And so he's been an advocate to Payne about, hey, like, we can play small because I can play the five. But I think a part of that and of showing, like, hey, we should try this, is if in those moments, excuse me, is if he's doing well, like rebounding, because I know that's probably the first thing Payne's going to say is, and like, well, look, like, yeah, you can score, but what are you doing on the defensive end? You know, are you not only just defending, but are you rebounding? And so the fact that he's had 8 rebounds these last 2 games, if he can continue that, I think that just continues to bode well for us as well. But yeah, he definitely in the second half seemed to really get some footing. It was a tough first half for him. I think it was pretty physical first half for him, but in the second half, it was like he kind of upped his own intensity level and was able to kind of find some spots. Like you mentioned, him and Braden were able to connect a few times, kind of get going there. So yeah, he definitely had a he had a solid game himself, all things considered.
Yeah, and there was one rebound that really stood out. And I made sure to jot it down because we've, you know, kind of been talking about how he needs to rebound more. But he had one offensive rebound on the weak side. He came flying in, got the rebound and got a
Oh, that led to
putback.
a layup. Yeah, that was a good one. Yeah.
And that was just one where you're just like, all right, like that's what you want to see from Trey there. And you know, he keeps doing that. Like, I know, like, if he keeps performing at this level, Purdue is going to be really hard to beat day in and day out. I did kind of just, as we wrap up kind of the basketball talk, Sim, I just kind of want to look at big picture here. So, Purdue plays the number 2 team at home and the number 15 team on the road and split it. And I think probably you ask anybody, that's probably kind of the most realistic outcome that most fans would have. But I just, you know, I think it's a credit one for Paint for scheduling these type of games. Like we talked about, you're playing two of the best guards in the country. You're playing two teams who play two totally different styles of basketball, which is only going to make you a better team to go up against these different styles. It had like a March feel where you beat one really good team and then you have to turn around on, you know, a couple days rest and play another really good team. So while it wasn't like tournament games, you know, or even like a Maui Invitational or anything like that, it felt like those type of games early on. And I kind of hinted at it at the start, but I think this was like the perfect game to play in November, to really learn kind of not only who you are, but what areas do you have to improve on. And I think there's a lot of lessons to be taken from this game, which is why, at the end of the day, why you schedule these type of games.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it before. I don't think any of the first 5 games that Purdue's played, I don't think any of them, if they had lost any of the others, none of them were gonna be bad losses on the resume. I mean, I think every game that they've played, each opponent, like whether they beat them or obviously in this case, like with Marquette, they lost, like that loss isn't gonna be detrimental. The same way that those wins are going to age well. And like you said, between what happened from between Friday and today, that's a very tournament-esque feel, you know, playing, because like, you know, in the tournament you could play on a Friday and then turn around and play on Sunday, and then assuming you win on Sunday, you could then find yourself playing that following Thursday. And like you said, you can play two high quality opponents, and between Alabama and Marquette, those are two teams who play a style of ball that you will find come March. And like you said, they're teams where even if you're able to win, there's going to be a lot of things that you can take away from them. And especially if you lose like it was today. And obviously the areas of improvement are a lot more, they're a lot more glaring when you lose, because, you know, there's, I think winning sometimes allows you to almost be able to sweep some stuff under the rug. Whereas when you lose, and especially like, even though the score isn't as indicative, you know, you're sitting there looking at the box score and you say, well, you lost by 18 and you got outscored on the fast breaks 19-4. You know, you had 15 turnovers. Like these are all things that are more glaring that just you can now work on, and you hopefully have the attention of your team in terms of like, look, guys, like that's a whether it was Alabama or Marquette, like that's a good team we just faced. You know, that's a team that that's a style we could see later. That's a team we could see later. So it's important, you know, to be able to pay attention to some of these details. The turnovers are something that's a very correctable thing, in terms of just the way that we play defense. There's a lot of things that you can take out of these games that we've had early on that you can work on throughout the course of the season. And then of course you get in the Big Ten season where that's not going to be like a walk in the park. Again, just more opportunities to continue to work on building habits and correcting the things that you can control and yeah, correcting the things that you can control. And so, yeah, I mean, that's why I hate losing. Cause like why lose when you can win, but you know, there's a lot of value that can come out of playing a tougher non-conference schedule for sure. And I think, and I hope that we will see that later this year when, you know, maybe in late February and stuff, you know, you're going into a more hostile environment and this team, you'll see a level of composure because of tonight and knowing like, hey, look, we didn't do our bet. We didn't play our best at Marquette, but you know, a similar situation arose where, you know, maybe they go to Madison and like, you know, another hostile environment. And then they're able to kind of execute and remain calm and play their style of basketball. And I think we'll look back at games like this and be like, yeah, that like these were the games that helped us get to where we want to be, become the team that we wanted to be later in the season.
Yeah. One last thing I just want to touch on with the basketball team. I think, you know, you got to just give a credit, a shout out, whatever you want to say, but a 39-game regular season non-conference winning streak was snapped. But, man, just credit to Purdue, the players, the coaching staff for scheduling games. Like, this is not something to take lightly. 39 straight regular season non-conference games won. Fourth longest streak in NCAA history. They also had a 25-game win streak in the month of November, which was the nation's longest streak. And the one thing I like to really highlight about that, too, is like it's not like they were playing directional schools every time. Like they were playing a tough schedule, and just wanted to give a shout out to, you know, just – I just want to highlight that because that's, you know, that's not anything we should take for granted as Purdue fans. Like that was one winning streak you don't see come around too often. So just, you know, just want to make sure we highlight that. Cause like we said, it's not like they were playing a bunch of no-name schools. Like they were playing top competition and won 39 in a row. And that's pretty dang impressive.
Right. Yeah, like you said, there were some brands there. I mean, Arizona, yeah, Duke, yeah, Gonzaga, I believe, twice, Tennessee twice, Marquette. Like we took on a lot of strong, formidable teams, and the fact that we were able to come out with wins for this long. I think they said the last time we lost a non-conference game was it December 2020 or something like that? So it's a long time. It's a long time. And so, yeah, it's definitely something that, you know, we'll sit back and reflect on and we should be proud. We should be proud of the fact that we were able to have such a long streak.
Yeah. So looking ahead now for Purdue, you know, they have, I don't want to call it a get right game, but I also wouldn't want to be Marshall and play Purdue on Saturday. That is game where I feel like some frustrations might be taken out. But that'll be Saturday the 23rd at Mackey Arena. It is a 12 p.m. start, and it will be on Big Ten Plus. So I thought we were done with Big Plus. Unfortunately, we are not. We have one more game with that, which makes sense because a lot of the other teams will be in football games that day, but we'll be playing on the hardwood. But that'll be the next game for the Boilermakers, Marshall at Mackey on Saturday. Switching gears, and wanted to just highlight a little bit for the women's team. I don't know if you had a chance to check out much of their game against Bellarmine, but they just got another win. It wasn't the prettiest of win for Coach Gerald's and company. It was a game they really had to battle back, especially late. They ended up winning 78 to 67. But it kind of felt like a game where, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, how pretty it is, how ugly it is. You're just kind of in the point of the schedule where you just want to stack wins.
Yeah, I mean, I think the women's team is much so like in the same, I think in a similar position as like as the men's team in terms of these. This is the time where you're trying to figure out, who you can rely on. You're trying to figure out figure out an identity. And yeah, like you said, you just at the end of the day, you just need to find ways to win. And so the fact that yeah, maybe wasn't the most aesthetically pleasing game, but they were still able to win. We take that as a positive, and you can build off of that because I'm sure there's plenty of talking points for Coach Gerald's and her staff to talk about with the ladies in terms of things that they need to shore up. Because if your non-conference schedule is seemingly easier than when you get into conference season, then obviously you want to start working on those things and getting those corrected sooner rather than later. But if you can do that in the course of winning, that always helps.
Yeah, and did just want to highlight a couple of the ladies. Reagan Bass had her second straight 20-point performance, finished with a double-double, 21 points, 11 rebounds, and 2 blocks. And then Rashida Jones, who really shot the ball well, 6 of 8 from the field, and finished with 15 points. So a nice win for the Lady Boilermakers. And they will finish out a 5-game homestand at Mackey Sunday. They will tip off 1 p.m. against UT Arlington. So be sure to check that out for the Lady Boilermakers. While we are on the subject of teams getting wins, we'd be remiss to talk about the volleyball team, who has been on a major heater. Including 2 more wins over the weekend. One where they swept Illinois, a really nice win. That was one where we talked about on the last pod. It kind of was one where you really wanted to see kind of how they stacked up. They have played kind of some lesser competition recently, but Illinois was a team who had had some impressive wins lately. And the ladies really kind of did not miss a beat at all. They swept Illinois in 3 sets, 25-17, 25-20, and 25-19. And kind of much of what we've talked about the past couple weeks since, it was just more of like take care of business and handle your business and get those wins.
Yeah, I mean, ever since the Wisconsin game, it's this portion of the schedule has been a lot more manageable, a lot more favorable to the ladies, and they've won 18 of the last 19 sets. The only set they dropped was one set against Indiana, but other than that, every other match has been a sweep. So yeah, when you have a more manageable part of the schedule where you have more winnable matches, you want to be not only just taking care of them, you want to be of course you want to win at the end of the day, but if you're playing teams that are of lesser competition, you definitely want to make sure that you're getting it done as quickly as possible. So for the fact that they've been sweeping all of these matches, like I said, outside of the Indiana match, which was just 3-1, yeah, that's very encouraging. And now we're about to get out of that portion of the program because it gets harder, as they close out the season. But yeah, they're definitely on a heater right now. And you just kind of like the hopefully they're just building some good momentum, because they got Penn State coming up next, and that's kind of a rematch of their Big Ten season opener, where Penn State actually came to West Lafayette and swept them. So hopefully the ladies are able to get their get back this Thursday.
Yeah, so things are going to get a whole lot more real for the volleyball team. Only 2 weeks left in the regular season, including one more home game But of those four matches left, three of those against ranked opponents. So you have at Penn State on Thursday the 21st. Then you are home for your final home game against 21 ranked USC. That's Saturday the 23rd. And then you head out west next week, Wednesday the 27th. You take on number 13 ranked Oregon at Oregon. And then you wrap up the year on Friday the 29th at Washington. So, I mean, it's about to get real. I would think realistically, if you're looking at it, worst case, you want to go 2-2 in that match. But like we've talked about, you've really built some momentum here in the past few weeks. And to your point, you have a chance to get kind of a revenge game against Penn State this week, and let's see what happens. But the ladies are playing really, really well, probably some of the best that they've played all year, which is what you want to see at the end of the year. And kind of, you have a chance to get some really big wins to put on your resume to wrap this season up.
Yeah. I mean, like, if they're able to go, if they're able to go ahead and like, run the table these last four, I can't imagine how they're not feeling extremely good about about themselves going into the tournament, which is exactly what you want. I mean, just like in basketball, you want to be rounding into form more so towards the end of the season, and it kind of seems like they've been doing that, like you touched on. But obviously now, it's going to be a little tougher at the end of the year. So if they're able to be able to string together some wins here as well, just to cap off the season, that's the regular season, that is, that'll go a long way. So obviously, fingers crossed for the ladies. And of the remaining four games, three of them are on Big Ten Network. So fortunately, of course, oddly enough, that's senior night, which is the one that's on Big Plus, but the other three are on Big Ten Network. So if you have it, you'll be able to check that out, especially the Oregon and Washington games, because those will be West Coast games, so late. So the Oregon games at what, 10:30, and on that Wednesday, and then Black Friday, the Washington games at 7:30 Eastern. So
Yeah. Be sure to check those out. It'd be really interesting to kind of see how the team wraps up their year, because they are really kind of on the upward swing. And now kind of it's a chance for them to kind of that they've kind of built on this momentum. And like we said, kind of really build some quality wins to help out with their so. Best of luck to the ladies as they wrap up their season there. Switching gears, I guess, Sim, we got to talk about it. The Purdue football team.
there's only two more games left, so the end is near, folks.
They lost again. And I mean, I don't want to keep beating on the dead horse, but it's been pretty much the same thing we've been used to seeing. They get down early. Really can't get anything going to start the game. They didn't score again in the first quarter. Shocker. They scored 3 points in the first half. Again, shocker. And it was just another game where they were clearly outmanned. And I don't know what more we can really say. It just kind of feels like we just need to get to the end of the season and kind of reassess ourselves. But I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to, we talked a little bit about it, like this seniors who have gone out there and just played their tail off. But two I really wanted to highlight was Gus Hartwig, who has just been a baller on the line, has really anchored that line playing center for Purdue. And I think it's going to be a steal as like a late round draft pick. I think you're going to see him make an NFL roster, and he's going to stick around for a while. That's just kind of, he's just kind of that type of grinder. And also wanted to just shout out Devin Mockabee. His stats didn't really jump off the page. 11 carries, 40 yards. But he's just a guy that like he brings it every week. And in a year like the year that Purdue is having, you really appreciate dudes like Maccabee, who just, come in every week, play their tail off, and leave everything out on the field. Not to say that the other guys aren't doing that, but I just wanted to highlight those two. In a year that, hasn't been what we thought, I think those two guys have really, really played well.
Yeah, I thought I saw that. I thought I saw that Hartwig had, like, I think it was a Pro Football PFF, like, rated him, like, I think it was like 87.7% this past week in terms of, like, his performance. So he's definitely been a bright spot. And like you said, Mockamy's been he's been solid all year. And like you said, it's unfortunate that some of even the better games that he has, they haven't been a part of wins. But yeah, it would be, it would be unfair of us to not give him a shout. So, as I said, when we switched over to talking about this, there's only a couple more games left, folks. So, we have Friday night and then the bucket game, which, yeah, I mean, you probably want to more or so occupy yourself with your Thanksgiving leftovers, or any type of like Black Friday, deals than that. 'Cause I'm not gonna lie to you, I don't think that necessarily is going to go well. So,
Or any hard alcohol you have, or beer or anything that'll kind of take the pain away, because it could get ugly there if if these games that we've witnessed now are any indication of what's going to happen, it might be one that you might want to forget about. But
handle
did
pulls
just
only.
and Devin Mockabee, please, no matter what happens, take the NIL money that Purdue gives you and stay with Purdue. Please, we need you at running back, Mockabee. Please don't go. But the Boilermakers, like you said, Sib, they got two games left. Obviously, on Friday night, it's going to be between the two games, a much better chance to get a victory. They will travel to East Lansing to play Michigan State on Friday night, 8 p.m. kickoff on Fox. I don't know why Fox wants to put Purdue on national TV, but they're going to be on there. It's no easy game, like we've talked about, under the lights on a Friday. If you're looking at just these two games, Michigan State and IU, this is the one where you would think Purdue would have maybe a shot to win. But I don't know, Sim, like I'm kind of at the point where I'm just like, let's just get through the year. I want to see Ryan Brown out there. I want to see him get some reps. Let's just kind of try to wrap this season up at this point.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong, man. I mean, you think we've all seen enough to where we, at least I hope that you're not still getting as frustrated as maybe you might have been getting, around like the Notre Dame game and that time of the year. But yeah, I mean, all I've been trying, I've really kind of felt this way for the last few weeks, but I've just been trying to see if there's anything. I just been trying to see for signs of like, okay, like we have something to build off of going into the off season. And obviously it's kind of few and far between. I know we've talked about kind of having a larger discussion about football and the program and whatnot, after the season. So I'm sure that'll be a very riveting episode, because I'm sure that's when the real feelings are going to come out. But yeah, I think between the two games, the Michigan State game is definitely the one you have an opportunity to personally to win, if there is, if you can say such a thing. I personally think that Fox put it on Friday because they were like, yeah, we just don't even want to have you on a Saturday anymore, so like we'll just kind of get you guys out the way. But yeah, we'll see what happens. The gift and the curse of being a Purdue fan is, stuff like with basketball on Friday, and then the curse is probably going to be this Friday. So I'll still be watching, because I don't like to make good decisions for myself and my happiness and my well-being, but that's okay.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Like you said, just at this point, you're just kind of just grasping for any positives that you can take. Hopefully there'll be some, but we'll see. And whatever happens, we'll make sure to break it down next week. But that'll just about do it for this episode. Again, Hopefully, like, nobody is hitting the panic button with the basketball team. Of course, we don't want to see the Boilermakers lose, but I think it was one, you know, we talked about with the non-conference schedule that Purdue has, you weren't going to run the table in the non-con.
Right.
So you split against Alabama and Marquette, and now you go look at the film and you get better, and you kind of see what you can improve on. And like I said, I really wouldn't want to be Marshall this week. I think that's going to be a game where kind of the frustrations are going to be taken out on Marshall, and then you get ready to head out west for the tournament over the holiday break there. But you know, a lot to build on. I think, you know, Purdue ranked the number 6 team in the country. I don't think anything changes after this loss. Obviously, they'll probably drop down a couple of spots, but I still think that they're one of the best teams in the country. And, you know, like I say, you just learn from this and move on and, you know, see how you can get better.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be it's gonna be interesting to see how this team responds after, coming off of a loss, especially when you have a few days to kind of sit and to sit in it and kind of be able to review and go over the film and get into practice and whatnot. I'm sure they'll probably be itching to get back out on the court. And Marshall, it's nothing personal, but it's just business. So if you guys do get handed a seismic L, again, yeah, it's nothing personal. It's just business. So, yeah.
Well, thank you everybody for listening to this episode. I hope y'all enjoyed it. Please give us a 5-star review. Make sure to share with all your friends and family. Really appreciate everybody kind of spreading the word about it. So thank everybody. And as we end every episode, let's make sure to boiler up.
Yes, sir.